From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where we bring you deeper dives into top news stories. This week, we're coming to you from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois. There, two veteran political reporters, Doug Sovereign from KCBS Radio in San Francisco and Craig Dallimore from WBBM News Radio in Chicago, are covering the event. We're lucky enough to have both of them join us for daily updates this week as we head into the real start of what's already been a history-making election season. Here's their day two talk.
KCBS political reporter Doug Sovereign back at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago with my WBBM radio colleague, Craig Dallimore. Craig and I have been covering this thing. We're on day two. And Craig, that was a pretty emotional night, a long, late night, but a lot of big speeches and, of course, the emotional climax of President Biden, right?
That was, of course, what everything had been building for. And I think one of the emotion was already building. The people already, I mean, I think for people who haven't followed conventions, you at least the modern conventions now, signage is a big thing. Mm-hmm. And so there were so many different versions of signs that would say things like, we love Joe.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah.
And those signs were being passed out by a battalion. Mm-hmm. Of volunteers all through but those signs were out there, but then we got a ringer, and that is fairly early in the program. We got a montage of Kamala Harris and, you know, issues and things like that to the tune of Freedom by Beyonce. And next thing you know, Kamala Harris is on the stage and the place went up. I mean, it sounded like the roof was going to go off. The surprise and her mission was to thank Joe Biden. And so that made it even more emotional.
Yeah. And the delegates didn't know she was going to come. We did, but they didn't. And when she came out, and you don't usually see that. I mean, most nominees do not take the stage to speak before Thursday. They might come out and wave when they're nominated, you know, after the roll call, but that's it. But she came out and gave remarks for a few minutes. And yeah, the energy level in that building changed so dramatically at that moment. As you said, raising the roof. I mean, people were sort of milling about and having chit chats and not always listening. When she came out, whoa, the whole mood changed 180. The place exploded. They were delirious. And from that point on, you had Hillary Clinton giving a really strong speech, you know, with more energy than we ever saw her give in 2016. They lapped that up. They loved AOC. Steve Kerr, the Warriors basketball coach, went over really well. You had one after another with just tremendous momentum. And then I thought it actually flagged a little bit, because right when you thought, okay, let's get to Joe Biden, you had a few more speeches by senators, governors, some of whom were very good. Raphael Warnock from Georgia was really good, but yeah, it was getting so late. And I thought, why would you bring the energy level back down and push poor Joe Biden to, you know, past midnight on East Coast time?
Yeah, I was surprised by that too. But I think these kinds of things can go off the rails when timing happens, when something unexpected occurs. And I think they got thrown off Kamala Harris wasn't on the agenda. And I think that may have been something that probably turned everything around, because they started trying to move pieces. And that may have been one of the things that was a factor. But I agree with you. Things flagged, but it picked up again.
Yeah,
toward the end. And I think it built well. And what a master. I mean, Joe Biden, having her there and just the love for her, having her give a speech that was not the introduction, I think was a mm-hmm. masterstroke, because people were up for it. And then the first daughter gave a really good, heartfelt speech. And I mean, certainly tugged at the heartstrings of the president.
Yeah, and it was the emotion did build up again at the end, and you heard, you know, really sincere, we love you, Joe. Thank you, Joe. I mean, there were delegates in tears on the floor. I mean, because remember, these are Biden's delegates, and a lot of them are sorry he's not the nominee anymore, even though they're very much in favor of Kamala Harris now. There are people there who would have preferred he not drop out of the race. And so I think it was very emotional for them, and their love and gratitude was sincere. And I think his was too. I mean, that line, I love my job, but I love my country even more. And, you know, America, I gave you my best. I think that's what the words were.
Yeah.
I mean, those would be really memorable lines. And can you imagine Donald Trump uttering those lines? I think very few Democrats could imagine such a thing. So it was a pretty powerful night overall. And I will say officially what they told us was the length of raucous applause is what threw the whole show off by an hour. I don't know that there was officially an hour of raucous applause, but certainly there was a prolonged reception for Harris. There was a very long standing ovation for Hillary Clinton, another one for Joe Biden. There were a lot of minutes of cheering and clapping, and that did help lengthen the night.
Yeah, I think that they clocked the official clocking of the first standing ovation for Joe Biden was like 4 minutes.
That's long. Yeah.
And he was not able to speak for several minutes. So I think the other thing that really worked towards the emotion was his enthusiasm. And he wasted no time. The very first thing he did was pretty much say, "Are you ready to save this country? Are you ready to vote for Harris Walz?" And so he didn't even build up to it. And I think his enthusiasm and we talked about this yesterday. His enthusiasm for the ticket, for what he has done, I think also helped carry it. And I think it would help bring his people along to say, no, it's okay. It's okay. I'm fine with it. And he sounded fine with it. Yeah. I mean, wistful, yes, but like, no, this is what we should be doing. I think you got that from him.
Yeah. I mean, we have to take him at his word. He does seem okay with it. I mean, he's 81. Go put up your feet and play with the grandkids. He does seem okay, but I think he does in his heart mean it when he says, we can't lose all these down ballot races. He doesn't want to go down in history as the guy who stubbornly stayed in a race he was going to lose potentially, that cost his party Congress, that gave them 4 more years of Trump. And if he can help pull this off, that Kamala Harris wins and he gets out there and campaigns, that'll be a huge part of his legacy. And now, speaking of legacy, former President Obama comes to the stage. He will get to be the spotlight speaker on the second night. And he and Kamala Harris go back quite a bit, 20 years or so. She was a very early endorser of his. I've got a picture somewhere of her going to his campaign launch in Springfield. She's just someone in the crowd. They'd met, but you know, they weren't close yet. But then she started campaigning for him in the snows of Iowa and New Hampshire. And he was a mentor to her when she decided to go for national office. So we expect now he and his wife, Michelle Obama, to give pretty full-throated endorsements of her tonight and to explain why she is now the best choice to carry this mantle forward.
I agree. And she, Michelle Obama, again, this is a case of giving a speech that is not the introduction to your husband. You and I were around in, the last time we did this live, 2016. Mm-hmm. And Michelle Obama is, if anything, a bigger draw than her husband sometimes. And that was where we got the famous, when they go low, we go high.
We go high, right.
That was Michelle Obama. She was the quote that came out of that convention.
And she's a very relaxed and natural and comfortable speaker.
Yes. So I'm looking forward to that. We are going to get some of the other the stars of the party. Bernie Sanders is going. Chuck Schumer will speak tonight. For us in Illinois, Tammy Duckworth is a local hero and was at one point a consideration for vice president. She was on that list before. And again, for at least for Illinois, we'll get our governor J.B. Pritzker. Not really a big thing for the national audience, but on the other hand, he's been toying with the idea of running for president, and other people are urging him to run for a third term as governor. So we'll see how much he tees himself up for a room. I don't know whether he's going to want to wait around for another 8 years. So
yeah, I saw him this morning. He was at the California delegation breakfast. He's been making the rounds as the host governor. I do think he is a potential presidential candidate. Now, if Trump wins, you might see Pritzker go in 2028 along with Josh Shapiro, Gavin Newsom, who knows who else. But if Kamala wins, yeah, then he's going to put that on hold. But he's still fairly young. Come back in 2032. There'll be a deep bench of Democrats waiting their turn 8 years from now if it comes to that. But I want to ask you about one other thing, a weird little wrinkle tonight, which I don't think I've ever seen. I doubt you have either. Kamala Harris is going to have a rally in Milwaukee tonight, a campaign rally at 8 p.m. and they're going to transmit it live back to Chicago to the convention hall. So she was, at first when I got the timing, I said that she's going to counter-program her own convention. But no, they're going to have her speak in Milwaukee and show that campaign stump speech at the convention in Chicago. I've never seen that happen before, which is a way for her to speak, I guess, on this night of the convention while actually being in another state.
I am intrigued by it, but I also think there may be a rationale because we have seen in Hillary Clinton's year, she appeared and spoke after she cleared the
nomination.
Poll.
Right.
And there's going to be a mock, actually meaningless roll call because right. I think a lot of people miss the old roll call. And let's face it, all the governors miss being able to tout their states.
Well, the great state of Louisiana.
Yeah, we're going to have one of those tonight. It'll probably be truncated and not take the hour and a half it usually does, one hopes. But maybe they're going to bring her in from there. I mean, maybe that's where she's going to come in. I don't know.
That could be. That's an interesting idea. I do know that. So it's they're calling it a celebratory ceremonial roll call. They're going to have a DJ on stage playing a walk-up song for each state. And Gavin Newsom, who many people thought, oh, he's going to get a prime speaking slot. He's not going to speak on the stage of this convention. He's just going to do the roll call from the floor, and that'll put her over the top. Yeah, maybe they'll time it. So that's a good point, Greg. Maybe they'll time it so that when that happens, they cut to Milwaukee and she accepts it from there. That would be actually a clever way to do it. So maybe that's what they have in mind. We'll find out.
Isn't technology wonderful?
Technology is. I was thinking just last night watching in the hall, how everything is projected now, the logos, the party colors, the themes, you know, those used to be cardboard signs and banners. People had to build stuff. Now it's all digital. You could say whatever you want. You can put up whatever you want. It's really remarkable. And the stagecraft, you know, gets refined each time. So maybe that's what they're going to do. And then if that works for her, maybe we'll see that every 4 years. Who knows?
I think so. Well, you know, we're, as you pointed out, technology has been developing. We're in a state-of-the-art stadium. The United Center has all the bells and whistles. It's gotten a fairly recently. I think one other thing that you noticed last night was the captioning is being projected, and that's intentional. I actually did, if I thought about it, I would have known exactly what they were doing. This is supposed to be the most accessible convention history.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they're doing is making sure that there's closed captioning, or not so closed, that's visible at all times.
On all the scoreboards, the places where you might look up and see, you know, what period is it? What's the score? What's the inning? Well, no innings in a hockey stadium, but yeah, they've got the closed captioning in, I don't know, six different places, something like that. I don't know.
Yes.
Jumbotron everywhere. Just in case you're missing anything or you need that, it's there. Yeah. Well, Craig, this has been great. We're going to do this every day, our On Deadline podcast for Odyssey. Craig Delamore from WBBM. I'm Doug Sauber from KCBS in San Francisco. And neither one of us has had much sleep. We probably won't get much the rest of the week either, but we'll be back.
Thanks, Saturday. Craig, we have.
Thanks, Craig, on the plane home on Friday for me. Thanks again, Craig, for doing this with me.
It's my pleasure, always.
Thanks again to Craig Delamore of WBBM News Radio in Chicago and Doug Sovern of KCBS Radio in San Francisco for this on-the-scene convention coverage. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to thank you for listening to this special edition of the On Deadline podcast coming to you from the 2024 Democratic National Convention. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.